breaks the law goes back to the house of pain.
He who breaks the law goes back to the house of pain.
Hello and welcome to Double Dribble Podcast. This is Paul Madavi. I am joined, as always, by Jason Palumbo.
Hey, everybody. Today,
sorry, Jay. I didn't mean to talk over you there.
That's fine.
Did you just say hello to everyone?
I sure did.
You're very predictable. We have a special guest today. Neil Payne is here. He has written for the Basketball Reference blog, as well as the New York Times basketball blog, which I believe is called Off the Dribble. And
that's
he currently writes for the Sports Reference blog. Is that correct, Neil?
Yes, we just started up a blog that basically provides site updates. So yes, that's technically correct.
Wonderful. Well, thank you for joining us and lending some credibility to our otherwise incredulous basketball site and podcast. We have a lot to talk about. So Jason, what I'd like to do is get your thoughts on the lockout. Was it really about owners versus players, or was it about owners versus owners? What are the lasting effects, and is the league better off now for having had this lockout?
Well, it didn't accomplish a whole heck of a lot in terms of the way the league struck the salaries are. They got the BRI stuff done that they wanted to do. They got their 50-50 split, which is probably as good as they were going to get from the owner's perspective. But as far as all the other stuff goes, I don't really think they accomplished what the hardliners wanted or what the league intended in terms of limiting player movement and sort of taking back control of the process of signing players, which has clearly fallen into the hands of the stars of the league.
Neil, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. Just the fact that the day that David Stern and had announced that the CBA had been finalized and this was a new era of competitive balance in the league, and then the Chris Paul trade thing happens and the fiasco of like having to block it just showed that the lockout didn't really accomplish any of the things that they said that they wanted it to accomplish, except limiting like the total amount of money given to the players. But it didn't solve the small market versus big market problem at all. In fact, it probably just made it worse, if anything. And I think that the only thing that's going to actually improve that is eliminating the maximum salary rule.
Agreed.
If you think about it, the fact that the top players are limited to a certain amount of money and they can't make any more, they can't make what they're really bringing in, it opens up the alternative considerations like, do I like the city and do I like who I'm playing with? Do I want to form a big three? If they really wanted to have each team have one superstar, let the teams pay whatever they want for them. And if you want to blow like 98% of the cap on one guy, be our guest.
And it might even be worth it at times.
Yeah,
if you can get the hot new thing, if you can get Durant to your team, even if you've got nothing else, people will come watch Kevin Durant.
Absolutely.
How does that address the question of a player walking away at the end of their contract?
That's something you can't really legislate against, though. That's the whole problem with this. This whole, they're trying to pigeonhole players into having to react in a predictable manner when that's just never been the case. And I'm gonna sort of shoehorn in a topic that that we discussed, maybe adding toward the end here. But once the salaries got to a certain level, once you got to the point where you were set for life after your first or second deal, it becomes very hard to try to force players or incentivize players not to leave a team. Basically, what you need to do is build a team atmosphere that is enjoyable to players. If Michael Jordan wants to sign great players and wants to keep the talent he has, he needs to make people want to play for the Bobcats. The same way that Mark Cuban makes players want to play for the Mavs. It's not just about the money. It's about facilities. It's about how you're treated and how your entire organization's run. and you know, taking responsibility instead of trying to create a series of edicts that that your employees have to follow. I think it's the only way to do it.
Neil, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, just the fact that, I mean, there's nothing inherent about a small market versus large market disparity that would make, that would overcome like a difference in salaries. And also, like, if you have the correct atmosphere, like Jason was saying, then you can convince people to come. Like, the Spurs are a great example of a team that it's not a sexy location by any stretch of the imagination, and yet they were able to build a team. And a lot of that is also getting lucky in the lottery. And that's another thing that you can't legislate.
Right.
There are, you know, the superstars are incredibly scarce, and just about like 90% of the titles went to the player who was in the top eight since 1959. I don't know if you saw that article.
I saw that on Prospectus, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so the bottom line is that there are more teams than there are championship caliber superstars. And if you get one in the lottery, you're pretty much set for 10 to 15 years. And if you don't, no amount of improvement to the facilities or anything like that is really going to help you unless you're able to get them to come to your city via free agency. But the good thing is that that phenomenon of getting those players to come to you instead of having to get them in the lottery seems to be on the increase, like with Chris Paul and like with Carmelo and LeBron even. So there is hope. Ironically, the LeBron situation gives hope to teams that don't get lucky in the lottery. Now, those teams are the sexy locations, I guess. So,
right. But you're right. It actually, there's actually more player movement now, which may be a better thing. It's interesting on the whole notion of players sort of choosing sexy locations or choosing to play with other stars. I remember, because I'm obsessed with him, I remember a Michael Jordan quote from a very long time ago. This is while he was still playing. And before they won their first title, I believe, when he said he felt an obligation, a duty to bring a title to Chicago. And, you know, every year it was horribly disappointing, you know, the Detroit or Boston or whoever it was that was stomping them out of the playoffs. But there wasn't this sense with him or with Ewing or with Miller or with Malone and Stockton that the grass was going to be greener somewhere else, or that, you know what, we just can't do this here. What we need is to all get together in one dog pile and out-talent everybody around us. Really, the only player of that whole generation I can remember making a move like that was Barkley.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, the way Philly was constructed was I went back and looked at this. He played his entire career in Philadelphia at the small forward. We called him a power forward, but he started next to Armin Gilliam or Rick Mahorn. Or I think that when he started, it was pretty much always those two, because when Doc and Moses were still around, he was coming off the bench behind Bobby Jones. So, I mean, his production was insane, and he obviously was good at what he did, but to be misused like that for that long and to just see that things weren't going on and to let your whole prime go. And this is kind of the same situation that Kevin Garnett fell into. But I just find it interesting that, and I do think the size of the money has something to do with it, where players feel like, you know what, I know my legacy is going to be impacted. The way I'm remembered is going to be impacted by titles, not just by all-star appearances. So it's time to move. You just didn't see that before. And I don't know if it's all about the money being so big that they don't have to be all about the money anymore, which is in a way, you know, a real positive thing. Or if it's more just, you know, this is my life. I want to play where I want to play with who I want to play with. If you or I said, hey, you know what, I can go work with my best friend, make enough money, maybe not as much as I could by myself here, and be in the city I really want to be in, we'd do it in a heartbeat. Nobody would question it. So, I don't know.
There is that funny kind of double standard there. If a general manager puts together a super team, and, I mean, the if you, if you want to count Michael Jordan for two superstars, you can say
yeah.
The Bulls had a super team. The Pistons certainly had a super team. The Celtics certainly had a super team and have another one now. It's not really a new trend. The new trend is the players deciding their own fate in these matters.
Exactly.
For whatever reason, that's something fans really, really dislike.
Well, if you think about it as a from a fan's perspective, what that means is we love you for 8 years. You're our hero, and we're all in with you, and we want you to take us to the promised land. But you just want to reach the promised land, and you don't really care if we're along for the ride.
Right.
And that's kind of a hard pill to swallow.
And I think you saw that a lot during the lockout, too, with the fans siding with the owners instead of the players, because the fans are inherently going to look at things from the perspective of their home team and, you know, hey, this guy is overpaid. How can we dump him? Or how can we acquire, you know, player X,
exactly.
Y, and Z?
Exactly. Yeah.
And so they're not identifying with the players. And so when the players start deciding their own destinies, like they've been doing in recent years, that's why it's so offensive to them. Like, they see themselves as GMs and not players.
Right, which is interesting. It is interesting. Kobe had a good quote recently where he basically, if you remember back in 2004 or 2005, he was pushing pretty hard to get out of LA, because he felt like they weren't spending any money and they were surrounding him with Kwame
Brian
Brown.
Cook.
And Brian
yeah,
Cook.
Smush
and
Parker.
Smush Parkers, right? I mean, that was a god-awful team. He's told some stories since about Kwame telling him not to pass him the ball in last-second situations. And Kobe says, yeah, but you're going to be wide open, though. They're going to double off you. He says, yeah, but don't pass it to me. I won't catch it.
Well, I believe he said he was worried about the fouls.
You may be right. And it's like,
but you're right, you couldn't catch it either.
That's true. But you go and you look at then one of Henry Abbott's little reports on what a terrible clutch shooter Kobe is, and it's like, you know what? Maybe I have to forgive him for 3 years of terrible decision making, because he didn't have any shooters except for Brian Cook or big men who wanted the ball in those situations. It's like, well, you know, I have a feeling a lot of players wouldn't pass in those situations.
Are you guys, Neil, are you in favor of a franchise tag in the NBA, the way they have in the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the NFL situation, you can see how when a player gets franchised, that was originally intended to be an honor for a player. Like, you know, you are paid the average of the top, what, 5 or 10 players at your position or something. And we're basically telling you that we're building the team around you. But in practice, it's actually been kind of a slap in the face of the players, because it contains their ability to choose their own destiny and where they want to go. And it artificially, you know, limits their salaries to that average. So I'm kind of torn on whether I wanted to see that in the NBA or not. Certainly, it would help a team like New Orleans. I mean, they would like franchise Chris Paul every single year, and he would get paid handsomely, but he would have no agency over his career path. But from a fan's perspective, it's really tough. Like for Cleveland, you know, they would franchise LeBron James, and instead he goes to Miami, and they're left picking up the pieces. So it just depends on whether you're in favor of the players choosing their own destiny, or whether or not you think that teams should be able to retain players for the fans' sake.
As NBA fans here, just in general, just the three of us, how wedded are we to any individual teams? I love the Celtics, but otherwise, pretty much throughout my fanhood, I have followed players. Charles Barkley, 3 teams, and every time he was on one of those teams, they were one of my very favorite teams because he was on it. I know you were pretty much the same way with Drexler, Paul.
Yeah.
You know, I followed Pippen that way. Garnett, I happened to live in Minnesota, and I liked him because I saw him all the time, and he was great. And then he went to my favorite team anyway, so there wasn't really any conflict there. But I would have followed, if he'd gone to anywhere except for the Lakers or the Pistons, I still would have loved him. How's that with you, Neil? Do you have that same kind of, because that's what we watch. We don't really watch colors so much anymore. We watch players.
Right, I feel the same way. Like, I'm a Celtics fan as well. But beyond that, I really align myself with, you know, players, and I want to see great players. I'm not even invested in, like, maybe the outcome of a certain game if it doesn't involve the Celtics. I just want to see great performances. Like, I want to see Derrick Rose play. I want to see Kevin Durant play. And so it's not about the team anymore. It's about the players. And I think that might be indicative of just our generation and the same generation that spawned LeBron James. You know, not favoring his loyalty to Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade over his loyalty to the Cleveland Cavaliers organization.
Yeah, I think it's a valid point. And I don't think it's actually being made out there that, you know what, these, you know, there was a time where loyalty to the franchise, the team franchise, was what was important. Now it really does seem like loyalty to your own franchise and maybe your friends' franchises. You know what did all this was the Redeem team. We never should have let all those guys hang out for that long. That was a big mistake.
Yeah, they got ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I got one more question for you guys in regards to the lockout before we move on to our next topic.
Yep.
Here's the scenario. We have certain owners in the NBA, like Mickey Arison. Mark Cuban and Jerry Buss. Right?
Paul Allen.
Billionaires with a B. If you have a value of $10 billion, that is so much more than, say, a Michael Jordan, who what do you suppose his net worth is? Maybe several hundred million?
Forbes put him at 500.
500. All right. So if Michael Jordan is losing 10, 20, maybe even 30 million a year on his team, that's an actual big hit to his net worth. Whereas you look at someone like Arison, who not only owns casinos, but owns a cruise line. He's raking in way more from his other businesses than he's ever going to lose from the Heat, which, by the way, I think last season was their first profitable season since their existence. Is there any way to overcome this money divide between the rich owners and the poor owners, but
it's what they tried to do. It's what the Jordan contingent, which we're putting him at the figurehead as the face of it, just because he's loud and obnoxious, and we know who he is. They came out and said, I need a hard cap so that other people can't just come in and outspend me and ruin my competitive balance, which is bullshit, but whatever. And I need the BRI equation to be thus so that I can't lose money because I can't afford to lose money every time, every season. And, you know, maybe it's no longer valid for people with hundreds of millions of dollars to be owners. I love Mike, and I hope he succeeds. And as a matter of fact, I've rooted for the Bobcats since he got there, just because he's there. But if it's such a hardship, then, you know, maybe this isn't the business to be investing in. Or maybe you need to move your team to Chicago, change the name to the Heirs, get space in the United Center that you helped build, and, you know, make money. It would work. People would come.
And I think it's interesting that all of the things that they tried to do from the owner's standpoint during the lockout were all on the player cost side. Because in the NFL, the money is just flowing into these franchises because they have the national TV deal, and it's just all revenue sharing. But that model doesn't work in the NBA because everyone has their own regional sports network. It's a strange hybrid between the baseball model, which is, we don't really care about parity. We'll just make up for it with randomness in the playoffs. And the football model, which is, we are deeply committed to parity at the expense of everything else, and we're going to revenue share the hell out of every dollar that we make. The NBA is kind of stuck in the middle, and because of that, the only way that the owners apparently felt that they could contain their costs were to kind of just reduce the percentage of BRI that went to the players and, you know, screw the players over, basically.
Is contraction a viable option?
in a perfect world, or in reality?
In reality, it's not going to happen, right? The NBA will never contract unless it goes into bankruptcy or something like that, right?
No. I mean, if the Hornets haven't been contracted by now, then I don't think it's going to happen.
I mean, here was the little scheme that I came up with. Is you take three or four of the owners that are complaining the loudest, whoever they are. They're the ones that are losing the most money and have the least money to lose. You say, look, we're getting rid of your franchises. It's not working in Sacramento, in Milwaukee, and wherever else. Maybe Charlotte. But here's what we're going to do. You three guys, you can have New Orleans. And now that it's three of you who each have $500 million, well, now you have $1.5 billion to spend on the team, and now you can compete with Arison and Buss and Cuban. Pretty crazy, right? Just nuts?
Well, I'm pretty sure once Michael Jordan sent Charles Oakley to kill the Maloof brothers and take their holdings,
I just
feel like somebody would take over all that and it would become massively unfair. There's two, you can't. As Napoleon once said, it's better to have one bad general than two good generals, because you just need somebody at the top.
Right.
And there wouldn't be. It would be a constant fight for power, and I think we know how that would turn out. No, I don't know that that's feasible. I do think relocation could really help a lot. Sadly, it does seem at this point that if you're not in a big market, there's just not enough money to be made. But again, as you point out, most of the really big money people who are owning teams here, other than Jerry Buss, most of their money's coming from other sources. So you know, it really could just be a matter of your fabulous wealth isn't fabulous enough to compete with their fabulous wealth. And the thing that's really frustrating is it has nothing to do with basketball. You know, that the wealth that we're talking about, it's not about how the teams compete and how the team. I can see where a team will say, hey, if we were better, we'd have more fans coming in and we'd have better deals all the way around. And that might be true in short spurts, but you can't – with money, you can't always be competitive in the NBA. It doesn't work that way. James Dolan has spent more money than anybody except maybe Mark Cuban over the last 10 years. And the Knicks have been just god-awful thanks to just a lot of crappy GM decisions and some bad luck. So I tried not to go directly after him that way because he wanted to beat up Bill Simmons and I don't want him to find us. But
we could blame Scott Layden instead.
Okay, Layden. There you go. There's no fear there.
No fear.
I'm still willing to blame Steph Curry. Or Steph Marbury, but and you know, let's blame Steph Curry too. I think I could take him. Anyway, yeah. As Neil pointed out, there's not enough superstars to go around. There's no way to enforce parity in the NBA. So if you think you're going to somehow, and the other problem with parity in the NBA is there any real sense that inspires people to go see games? If everybody's winning 42 to 47 games, does anybody care? I really think it's super teams like the Celtics and Lakers of the 80s, the Bulls of the 90s, and Miami now who drive the popularity of the league.
I totally agree. If you look at like the ratings of the finals on TV, the ones where there was a dominant team like the Bulls or even the Heat last year are the highest by far, and it's the kind of nondescript finals between, I don't know, the Spurs and the Pistons that no one watches.
Right, and now the Spurs and Pistons would turn around and argue, well, it's because we're small market and we don't have those built-in giant fan bases. But the truth is you're not getting middle America because they just don't care about these, you know, they don't care about Tim Duncan, which is sad, but they don't. So, yes.
Okay, good discussion, guys. We're going to take a tiny short break, and we will be right back. Yes. Shouldn't left you.
without a dope beat to step to say. Shouldn't have left you without a dope beat to step to say. The word is back.
Okay, we're back. And our next topic here is Chris Paul. I want to briefly talk about the first trade. If it was better deal than the second trade, did Stern actually act in interest of the Hornets as a franchise, or did he act in the interest of small market owners as a group? Neil, why don't you go ahead and start us off with your thoughts on the Chris Paul situation?
Okay, so I thought that the first haul that they would have gotten, which was Lamar Odom, Kevin Martin, Goran Dragic, Luis Scola, and the Knicks' 2012 first-round pick, was actually an incredible trade return for a guy that you knew was going to be gone at the end of the season. And the Hornets had no leverage except playing teams against each other, and really with the ownership situation so sketchy, that was an amazing return on a trade. So what they actually got, which was Eric Gordon, Al-Farouq Aminu, Chris Kaman, and Minnesota's first round pick, which is going to be high in a loaded draft, I think that that might actually be worse than what they would have gotten from the Lakers. And it just shows that Stern, his rationale was more to keep the Lakers from getting Chris Paul than it was about actually getting the Hornets the best value they could in return for Chris Paul.
I disagree 100%.
Okay.
And for, I think you're right in terms of the total overall talent, but the question comes down to what's the Hornets' goal here? Are they trying to be an eighth seed team that squeaks in? Because what we're talking about is a franchise player, a franchise point guard. Best point guard we've seen since Magic Johnson, maybe. As a matter of fact, I think you ran the numbers on this recently on one side or another, better than Magic by most metrics.
Right.
At his peak. He's not at his peak anymore, maybe, although it's hard to tell with injuries, but and with such a crummy team around him. But it's Chris Paul. What you're picking up for him are a bunch of borderline non-all-stars. You get no marketability with Lamar Odom, with Kevin Martin, with Luis Scola. They're all really good players, but none of them's great, and none of them's known, at least known for not being married to Kardashians.
Right.
So what you're talking about is the Rockets pick, was it? I can't remember whose pick they got in that.
It was the Knicks first.
The Knicks pick. Okay, so it's not going to be. So it's not going to be. Probably it's not going to be a lottery pick.
No.
And a bunch of guys who have peaked, and their peak's not that great. So unless you think you're going to be able to retrade all these guys piecemeal to pick up young players or draft picks, you know what your cap's going to be. Your ceiling is just not going to be high enough to be a great team. So if your goal is to be if you think competitive means we're in the playoffs every year, you're probably going to be good enough, depending on if you think Jared Jack's really a point guard or if you can replace him with something.
And I think that's definitely a playoff team. I mean, you would agree that was a playoff team that they would have had with the –
Probably. I'd have to look around. The West is always so tough to figure out because, you know, all right, let's assume that the Clippers are suddenly in the playoffs. The Blazers still look like they're good enough to stay in the playoffs. It's like who drops out to give the other LA team, to give the Clippers a chance to move in, and I haven't really looked at it to see in terms of the talent.
Memphis.
I think they'd be good enough. Memphis isn't dropping out.
No, they're not dropping.
I don't know.
Z-Bo.
We could talk about this in the prediction section.
He's a basketball playing truck. They're not dropping out.
I just don't see where they got any worse.
Semi truck with a basketball attached to the windshield. okay.
Anyway, they have the talent to make the playoffs. I agree. Whether they actually would or not is, you know, that's speculation. But I just don't know if making the bottom of the playoffs and going out in the first round, which is what I would expect them to do with that group, what their overall goal is, particularly when they're looking for a new owner. A new owner is probably looking more for hope than for mediocrity. the end.
Right, that's fair. And, of course, that pick, I guess, really everything hinges on Minnesota's first-round pick in the sense that we've talked about this in the past and people have done studies on this, that it's better to be either really awful or so you can get a pick or if you can grab one in a trade than to be 41-41 and just be mediocre.
Right, exactly. Which they would probably be like 47 or 48 and a pretty good team. It just they'd never get better than that with that core.
Yeah.
They just wouldn't have the resources to do it, and those players aren't improving anymore.
And I think on average the players they picked up on the second deal had smaller contracts.
Yeah. Kamens is almost over.
Yeah, less expensive overall.
Gordon they're not gonna want to get rid of anyway, and Amino's is a second year who we don't know how good he's going to be yet.
Okay, so Paul is with the Clippers. He signed his one-year extension. You guys both like Paul on the Clippers, right, Neil?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Playoffs?
Oh, yeah.
I'd be shocked if he didn't make the only question is, can he stay healthy in this super shortened season?
Yeah, with the back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah, because without him, they're nowhere.
Okay. And what do you think about the Hornets letting David West go in the middle of all this? He's now a Pacer.
I think I don't think they had a really good shot with him. I don't think he wanted to be there anymore. He, in some interviews, and I kind of heard the same thing out of Paul, not having ownership is really bothering them. They really don't feel like there's any direction, and I think he just would rather be with a team that he feels like has some kind of leadership. That's just sort of what I took from his interviews.
Right, and that's the situation where if you decide to go for the first trade and you get those guys that are maybe like B-plus players but not all-stars, and then you keep David West, I mean, that would be one direction that you go in. But since they're going in the other direction and they want to build, you know, just totally tear it down and reload, then it didn't make any sense to keep him around.
Right, right. Okay. One more borderline all-star.
Yeah.
Have there been any other trades that stick out to you guys?
There's a signing that sticks out to me living in New York. Mr. Chandler.
Tyson Chandler?
Yeah. People are crazy here now. They're talking about championships. Mike D'Antoni's talking about championships.
They're overvaluing Chandler, aren't they, Neil?
It depends on exactly how much they're valuing him, because defensively I think he's the real deal, and the Knicks were 22nd in defensive rating last year, so he's going to make them so much better. He's going to allow Amari to go back to power forward, which is going to be good for him, and I think that they're a much more legitimate contender now than they were before they signed him, certainly.
I would agree with that. I have a lot of problems having watched Tony Douglas play for a year, envisioning him actually being a point guard. And they need another move in their backcourt, because Tony Douglas and he's playing out of position. Mike Bibby, God rest his zombie bones.
Yeah, the zombie corpse of Mike Bibby out there.
He's done. he can't handle against pressure. It's really sad when you see that with point guards, when they hit that age where if you pressure them, they can no longer move the ball into position. And he definitely hit that last year. Watching him play for the Heat was almost embarrassing. And then Landry Fields, who's going to probably be their starting shooting guard, isn't a shooter, isn't a guard, can't handle.
Well, he can make shots, though.
Yeah, he can make shots, but can he space a court, which is what they need? I don't want the thing you really don't want to have happen here, and I remember this happening in LA for a while, is you've got all these slasher types, all these athletics, like Smush, for instance, and the best player on your team, the one who should be creating, is forced to be your pressure valve, your pressure release, because he's the only player on the court who can shoot. And Kobe's not that good of a shooter, so there's a good reason the Lakers sucked. But if they try to make Carmelo into that kind of a role, that's not going to work. Tony Douglas can shoot. He can catch and shoot. But he's not a good decision maker. And Landry Fields actually had a, I looked this up before writing an article, he had a higher turnover ratio. His turnover percent was higher than his usage or his assist percent.
Yeah.
That's just a god-awful thing to have. So I fear for their backcourt. I fear for their ability to get the ball into the right position to run a play. And D'Antoni is saying he intends to use Carmelo as a Larry Bird-like point forward, which is also...
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's like, not that he's not a good passer. He sees people sometimes, but, you know, Larry Bird was the greatest passing forward of all time, and it's not close. No offense to LeBron. And yeah, and he was a pass for he for a guy who scored 30 points a game. He was a pass first player. That was his game. Carmelo is a shoot first, second, third, fourth, and then maybe try to get to the foul line player.
Yeah, his shooting is off the charts. I don't know why you would want to put him at the beginning of a play instead of the end.
Right. Exactly. Anyway, you can't force James Worthy to be Magic Johnson. Although you might be able to force Magic Johnson to be James Worthy.
We had a lot of amnesty moves. That was one thing that the one of the new provisions in the CBA that teams are taking advantage of. You guys like this?
Oh, I always like it. I like the I like the lead up to it, just in terms of deliberating whose contract was like the worst on every team, and who would get amnesty.
Who was the worst? Did you put together a list for yourself?
Well, I mean, mentally, this rule is named after Rashard Lewis, right? And that would be one of the worst. But he hasn't gotten amnesty yet, has he?
No. I think there's good reason not to, actually, on that.
Yeah, because he's still useful.
Exactly. And
it's tough to sell to the ownership, hey, we just paid this guy 2 years ago this massive contract, and now let's cut him loose. And still pay him, though,
and
to play for someone
else.
And
then have to replace him with someone who we hope is as good as he is.
Yep. Yeah, so I'm guessing the poster child for this is going to be Baron Davis.
Baron, my personal favorite amnestied is, I think he was amnestied, maybe he was just waived, is Gilbert.
Oh, yeah. He was amnestied.
Yeah, man. He was. Very quickly. Very quickly. Yeah, I like it. It's good. One of the few provisions in the CBA that gives the owners flexibility without punishing the player for basically signing on the dotted line. If somebody puts $15 million a year in front of your face, believe me, you're going to sign it. Did you guys have any other trade items you wanted to talk about? Anything else about Chris Paul?
I'm really looking forward to watching Hornets games. Hornets games. That's a sad, sad thing. I'm sorry, Orleans.
That's actually depressing.
It is depressing. Clippers games. I'm actually looking forward to watching Clippers games for the first time ever. I don't really remember them ever being on television back when Mark Jackson and Ron Harper were there, but I'm sure that was fun to watch too. But yeah.
And who could forget the Pooh Richardson Loy Vaught era?
We remember, and I'm sure my good friend Paul, growing up Knicks fan, remembers the Charles Smith era and how lovely it was to lose Mark Jackson and gain Charles Smith to his team. So
yeah, that was great.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Let's talk, not really a amnesty or a trade, but, how about the, sudden retirement of, Brandon Roy, who,
yeah, speaking of depressing items.
Yeah. Oh, have you guys seen the news about, Jeff Green yet?
He has some kind of mystery disease, no?
He's got a heart ailment. He's going to need surgery. He's out for the season.
Oh, boy, good job, Danny.
I don't know what it is about Danny Ainge, but he picks players up and they immediately get injured in some form or another. Jay, as a Celtics fan, this must be absolutely brutal for you.
He spent all of his karma, every good thing that Danny Ainge ever did in his life, he spent on Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen. And this is just how it's going to be until we get rid of Ainge. I'm okay with it. We won a title in 2008, and we should have won two more. And I got to feel that sense of frustration yet anticipation for those years, and that's all you can really ask from a sports franchise. So I'm just going to deal with the fact that we suck now. That's all right, but we're going to be hurting this year. Everybody who says, "Oh, all these old teams are going to really come through." 66 games. Garnett apparently is playing bone on bone. Shaq made some statement about how much pain Garnett was in and how he probably shouldn't have played at all last year. And I'm sure that's not getting better. Pierce is getting slower. Rondo's got to be upset about all the trade rumors where he was trying to be put up for Pierce. Oh, and by the way, I heard the Knicks wanted Rondo. I don't know how that would work. Yeah, so I think this is a season where we probably drop out of the top four in the East and don't make the second round.
Yep. Meanwhile, Big Baby Davis and Kendrick Perkins look like the supermodel versions of themselves now.
I haven't seen. Are they both...
Between the two of them, they've lost a human being. I'm serious. Google image search it. They look crazy. Neil, we were talking about this a little bit before the show started. The Sixers, one of the few franchises not making moves. What is your take on that?
Well, I would have. I'm living in Philadelphia now, so I'm kind of following the team, and I think that they've still got the same core that they did last year for the most part. And if Evan Turner turns into anything, which of course doesn't look very likely right now, then I mean I think that they'll improve. I was looking at actually from Basketball Prospectus the spreadsheet of the projections for this year, and the projection system actually has them as the fifth seed in the East ahead of the Knicks, and I'm kind of trying to figure out how that the computer spit that out, actually, because it's exactly the same roster last year. Andre Iguodala is expected to be the best player, which is not a surprise. And I'm guessing it's just a lot of Drew Holiday improvement and, you know, Jody Meeks. I'm not optimistic about the season, but apparently the stats are.
Okay. Well, I thought you were in control of the stats. What's going on?
No, I'm actually not in control of this system. And in fact, a lot of times, even when I am in control, I'm not really in control. It does whatever it wants. It has a mind of its own. But they brought back Thaddeus Young, so, you know, that's...
At what cost, though?
Yeah, right.
Did you think they were going to amnesty Elton?
Well, I thought that they might eventually, you know, within the next year or so. I mean, he's still useful, though. And that's another case where it's like Rashard Lewis, where why would we want to get rid of a guy that at least still can produce something? Like with Gilbert, I mean, he's toast. So, of course, you're going to amnesty him. And Cleveland just needed to get Baron Davis the F out of there. But with someone like Brand, it's a lot harder decision. And you want to just hold on to him and see if you can get any production out of him before cutting him loose.
Yep. All right. That makes sense.
Okay. I think that covers it for trade talk. I'm going to take another short break, and we're going to come back and talk about the shortened season and how that's going to affect players. Okay, and we are back. Double Dribble Podcast. Neil Payne, Jason Palumbo, guys, talk to me, and Neil, we'll start with you first. Talk to me about the 66 game season. We've got a lot of nights of back-to-back games and, even back-to-back-to-back games. Neil, what has your research been on this? What are your thoughts on this? How is this going to affect teams? Which teams do you see coming out ahead because of this, and which are going to suffer?
Well, first, I'm hoping Roland Beach changes 82games.com to 66games.com for the season. But I'm also, from what I've seen, the effect of back-to-backs and the rare back-to-back-to-backs is really debilitating on offensive efficiency. I expect this season to be really ugly, especially at first, just as the teams figure it out. Like, that's a cliche that a lot of people are throwing out, but there's actually statistical evidence to back that up, that just the impact of playing these consecutive games. Now, you would assume that it would have to hit the older teams harder, but a by the same token, teams that are older tend to have had a lot of continuity through the lockout, and mm-hmm. so they might be able to offset that just by having that chemistry, whereas the compressed training camp and preseason are going to make a lot of teams that made a lot of moves, they're not familiar with each other yet, and that will impact their efficiency. But all in all, I just expect a really unwatchable season for the most part.
I'm trying to remember the best teams in 99, and I actually think the older teams did pretty well.
It's true, yes.
Although they may have gassed out a little bit, but Miami losing to New York was pretty fluky, right? So really, it probably should have been the Heat or the Pacers, right? Mm-hmm. Against San Antonio or I don't think Utah did very well in the playoffs. I think they were pretty gassed out. If I recall, they got beat by Sacramento pretty early on. So probably San Antonio, or it was Portland, right? It was Portland who was so good that year with their 10-man deep roster that San Antonio barely beat. They got that sideline three from Sean Elliott with his heels out of bounds. To make an actual point here, if you really look at things, it was the defensive teams. It was the teams who could hang their hat on playing really good defense. So you're probably right, Neil, given that we can expect offense's efficiency to suffer drastically, A, due to no practice time, and B, due to all these back-to-back-to-backs. The teams that have really dependable defense are probably the ones who are going to benefit from all this.
Do you guys, I've heard a lot of, I listen to a lot of sports shouting, and there's a lot of people who say, you know what, the NBA should probably start on Christmas every year, and it should probably only be 50 games or so. How do you guys feel about that?
That would suck.
I disagree.
Okay.
I think that maybe not starting on Christmas, but certainly starting the season later, just spreading out the games more would definitely be an improvement. And the fact is that basketball games, because of the number of possessions and the fact that you can direct possessions through the most dominant players, they'd give you a lot more information than games in other sports. Like, I think it was 14 basketball games is the equivalent of a 16-game NFL season and like 28 games in hockey and 162 baseball games. So you're getting basically an entire baseball season in 14 basketball games. And so the rest of the games are just kind of, telling you things that you didn't really need to know.
That's incredible. I'm actually in favor of fewer games spread out further. I think it would make each game, and I don't think I would go below 50, probably somewhere in the 60 range right now. I just feel like each game would feel a little bit more important. 82 just seems like such a long season. I can see that argument, and as a basketball fan, I can see the other argument, which is no, give me as much basketball as I can. Hook it to my veins.
Yes. Well, and you know, the other thing is there's something to be said, and I know this is like contrary to what, and I agree with what both of you were saying. The basketball would, in and of itself, probably be better, and we probably do know everything we need to know about a team a lot quicker than an 82-game schedule. But there's something about overcoming the grueling, injuries are a part of the game, and overcoming a grueling schedule, it's a part of building a team. It's a part of the reason you have depth. If you could only have a shortened season with nice long gaps in between, why would you bother to have a 12-man team? You'd only need 7 or 8 guys.
Yeah,
your top players. It would really change the dynamic, I feel, of the way the sports played, and maybe for the better. But I really liked Scott Williams and Cliff Levingston and Bobby Hansen. And it would have been sad if they never got on the court.
Neil, I get the sense that basketball, because of its schedule, because of the 7-game playoff series, is the least random of professional sports in America. Is that true? Have you found that?
Oh, by far, yes. The best team usually wins in basketball, or at least you can be more sure that the champion, after all the playoffs are done, is the best team than in any other sport, and it's not even close.
Football obviously is extremely random. Baseball can seem random, particularly when you get to the playoffs, even though they have a huge schedule full of games. One more note on this. Next Sunday, Christmas Day, there's going to be like 6 games on. Which game are you looking forward to most, Jason?
Do we have a rundown of what they are? I don't remember them all anymore. Yeah, sorry.
I believe it's Celtics, Knicks, Mavs, Heat, Clippers, Lakers, maybe?
Oh, Clippers, Lakers? Can I pick that one?
If that's actually on the schedule.
Let me bring the schedule up here.
Actually, you know what? You don't even need to bother. It's whatever. It's the Heat game. I want to see the Heat play. If they've gotten better, I want to see if LeBron's new post-career is actually going to start or not. And like I said, I'm kind of discouraged about the Celtics right now. So if we manage to destroy the Heat or the Knicks in the opening game, that will be fun for me at work the next day. But other than that,
We will start at noon on TNT with Boston versus New York. We will then have Miami at Dallas, 2:30 on ABC, and then at 5 p.m. we have Chicago at LA, and I think that's the game that I am most interested in.
Why is that?
First of all, I really want to see if Pau Gasol is going to be able to overcome whatever happened to him in the playoffs last year, and if he's going to be able to overcome almost getting traded. And as for the Chicago Bulls, I want to see if Rip Hamilton has anything left in the gas tank. I want to see if Derrick Rose got any better. We saw him improving his jump shot last year. And then we also saw it falter in the playoffs. So, what I really, really want to see is I want to see Mike Brown coach the Lakers.
word from Tom Thibodeau is they're actually putting in plays with Derrick Rose in the post, which is interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah. Don't know what lineup's going to get him the ball anywhere since he's their most competent dribbler, but I like to see that.
And for Neil, what did you say your favorite, what your pick was?
I got to go with Miami at Dallas, but I also would be interested in tuning in for the Clippers at Golden State just to see, because Golden State plays at such a fast pace, and I want to see a lot of Chris Paul to Blake Griffin alley-oops in transition.
Yeah. See, I would have moved Blake Griffin higher on my draft list, but he was already at 3rd.
Yeah, I got to set that up. I haven't done that yet. Neil, you don't want to join a fantasy league, do you? Do we have any spots?
Oh, I never have enough time for those things.
Yeah, neither do we anymore. That's why someone wins at random these days.
Next year, we'll get Neil on this. We've closed the teams. The draft is tomorrow, so the league's on double secret probation until other drafts get picked. Good. Okay, so we're going to take another short break, and I think we've already discussed pretty thoroughly the Stars and their big market versus small market leanings. So what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and come back, and we'll have our predictions for next year. Final segment of this podcast. guys, I want to hear some predictions. We don't need to go super in depth on here. We don't need to rank the top eight teams for each conference unless you want to. But give me your picks. Who would be your top three or four teams for each conference? And then give me a little shakedown on what you think is going to happen in the playoffs. And Neil, why don't we go ahead and start with you?
Okay, so first of all, I think the Clipper hype is legit, actually. If you look at their team, they were a bad defensive team and a even worse offensive team last year, and they've improved actually markedly on offense. That's obvious because Chris Paul just is an incredible offensive player, and they got the pieces to go around it with Caron Butler also. But also on defense, they've improved, actually. If you look at the guys that they're trotting out last year, and I looked at the plus-minus on this, and they were putting out some truly awful players on defense throughout their rotation. Really, their only good defensive player was Kamen. He's gone, but you can expect Griffin to continue to improve. Butler is actually a big upgrade at the three, and it just depends on whether or not Billups is, you know, how he can go. But he's defending bigger guards. So I think they've improved at both ends, and I think they're going to be one of the top three teams in the West, actually.
Wow.
That's my bold prediction for the year. And that means that I think that the Lakers are actually headed for maybe a bit of a decline this season. So the best team in L.A. might be the Clippers.
Wow.
Yeah, and in the East, I think it's just going to be basically the same as last year. Maybe the Knicks make it in the top three, but definitely the Heat and the Bulls are going to be one and two in some configuration.
And then you think either New York or Boston?
Yes, is going to be the third team in there. I'm not sure what Orlando has left in the tank at this point.
Yeah, they're pretty depleted, although they did get Big Baby.
Oh, well, then let's mark them down for the championship.
Neil, you said the Clippers would be third. Who do you have one and two in the West?
I have Oklahoma City number one and Dallas number two.
Okay, and so you think the Lakers will slip to four or five?
Yes, I think they'll slip to probably four.
Okay, and then as far as Portland, Houston, Memphis, out of those three, how would you rank them?
Oh, well, I would put Portland by far best in that. Houston, I think, is going to fall off. Even Memphis, I think, is going to fall off because last year, if you look at their difference between their Pythagorean record and their actual record, they were not quite as good. I know they pulled off some playoff upsets, but it was borderline as to whether they actually even deserved to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And so I think that they're probably going to regress to the mean. I think Denver's going to do pretty well again. And then the Spurs are, you know, I think they'll hang on for another year. So I think that I would pick Portland, San Antonio, and Denver to finish ahead of Memphis and Houston.
Denver should be better. All their malcontents are locked up in China.
In China, which is a good place to put your malcontents.
It is.
I feel like. Because when they come back, they'll have a new outlook on life also.
Yes, they will. And I wonder how that one child policy is going to go over with because some of those guys.
J.R. Smith.
Jason,
bold predictions by Neil. I'd like to see the Clippers get a little more front court depth. Just because I don't even know who their next four or five man behind Blake and Jordan is.
Trey Thompkins. Have,
uh-oh, never heard of him.
Yeah, exactly.
that doesn't help.
That's what I'm.
So a little bit of help up front, and I think if they could trade maybe Mo or one of their other excess point guards, that would probably get them what they need. And I think they're going to be pretty good too. I don't know if they'll pass the Lakers only because of continuity. It's tough. It's really tough to predict with LA. They're losing Odom, who's been a key to their team for like 6 years now, and they're losing Phil Jackson. So we don't know what they're going to be like. But we do know that their best three players have played together for a really long time and have had a lot of success. Kobe may actually be, and Bynum, maybe better than we would expect because of all the rest they've gotten. you know, Kobe's got an injured everything the past few years. So for him to get a lot of time to not have to really push those injuries is probably good. So they're hard to predict. I think San Antonio will be pretty good again just because of continuity. Their continuity is really strong. Same coaching, same everything. So their chemistry should be pretty good from start to finish. It's just a matter of how well will Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili hold up to the rigors of this season, which may not be very well. I agree wholeheartedly with the Oklahoma pick. I can't think of a team that's in a better position this year. They have youth on their side. They have a deep playoff run under their belt, so they're focused on what they need to do. They've got good coaching continuity as well. They're talented. Pretty much everything you could ask for in this scenario, they've got it. And as far as I can tell, everybody really likes each other too. So that's probably going to help when you don't get any time away from each other. Out east, I just can't see anybody beating Miami. I really can't picture it. They do have some continuity now. Their three stars seem to have learned how to play together. Bosch reportedly has bulked up and is willing to play center this year, which they need. I think a lineup of Chalmers with Wade and LeBron, Bosch and Haslam may actually be good enough to beat anybody they run into. You have to remember that Haslam was never really himself last year. And they're not so old that you worry too much about the games piling up on anybody except maybe Wade, whose knees are a little creaky. LeBron is indestructible. Yeah, so they're frightening.
And we're forgetting about one of my favorite additions of the offseason was Shane Battier.
Shane Battier, yeah. And that's the other thing they can do that I love the sound of this lineup. Tell me if everybody else thinks this is going to be brutal to compete against. But when they go with Chalmers and Wade in the backcourt, Battier and LeBron at the forwards, and Bosch at the center, they're so fast. They've got everything you need, shooting, defense, and if LeBron just decides, yes, I'm going to get 10 rebounds this game, you're boned. I really like that addition too. He's a good influence in terms of keeping everybody under control. I feel like if he'd been there last year, all their player meetings and all their crazy bullcrap that went on would have really been minimized just by having leadership of somebody sane, articulate, and not caught up in the hype. I honestly don't think anybody else out east even matters. Chicago, I guess if Rip makes them that much better and if Boozer can stay healthy and be productive, they have a shot, but I don't think so. Not against Miami. Miami just would take an injury for me to expect anybody to beat them in a 7-game series. Third team, I guess I would also go with probably either New York or Boston, depending on if Boston can do anything to replace Green, Perkins, Shaq, and everything else they lost.
Where are you putting Orlando?
I can't spot them at all.
It's really tough.
They actually could be top three when you think about it. Dwight by himself, if they keep him. We haven't really talked about Dwight at all here. Let's introduce that topic really quick here, but if they manage to keep Dwight and he can focus through, I'm not sure Dwight's learned how to focus at all yet, but if he can focus through the circus that's about to surround him, he's a huge advantage because there aren't any other centers in the East except for Bogut, who may never recover. And Chandler now. Anyway, who cares? The point is, Dwight's awesome. Jameer Nelson has flashes of usefulness, and that might be all you need to get a top four spot this year.
It might. It's really tough, and usually it is every year. But if you look at, well, there's Atlanta still. They've got continuity as well.
I'm going to miss Crawford a lot. As bad as he is, he did something for them that they don't have anybody else who does.
The spark. spark off the bench.
He moved the ball when you needed it. I feel like he gave them confidence.
But, you know, Toronto, Milwaukee, Detroit.
How are you feeling about Milwaukee?
They're going to be awful. They're going to be just terrible. Terrible. They were the worst shooting team in the league last year by a long shot. I think I read today that they had one person shooting near 50%. I think that was Corey Maggette. And then they had five additional players, including probably their most recognizable name, Brandon Jennings, shooting less than 40%.
Oh,
yeah. And they didn't. They got Steven Jackson, who
in exchange for Maggette.
In exchange for Maggette, who is not a high percentage shooter. Doesn't look good.
Okay.
Yeah. But we got John McLaughlin on the color commentary. So as long as I can hear somebody shouting cream cheese and other ridiculous things during the Bucks games, I'll keep watching, I guess. Oh, and Ersan Ilyasova. I like watching that guy play. He's crazy. So they'll likely be just terrible. I don't think there's any hope for them this year. Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's it. Did you guys have anything else that you wanted to talk about, Neil?
No, I think I'm good, actually. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Thank you very much for being here. We'll definitely have you back sometime if you enjoyed yourself.
Oh yeah. It was a great time, guys.
Do you guys know, I don't know that anybody's really brought this to like the public attention, but the Lakers drafted a player named Darius Morris.
Oh my
who
gosh.
I believe may be a combination of Darius Miles and Chris Morris, some kind of genetic anomaly. And does that make them the favorites if they have Darius Miles and Chris Morris in one package?
I would say so.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're approaching anything close to Darius Miles.
Right.
Okay. I mean, yeah.
Even if he's watered down with Chris Morris.
Is that watering down or is that bolstering up? I don't know.
It's tough to tell.
It's both, actually.
It's take
both,
a lot right, of bad three-point shots. I'll tell you that much.
That's the conundrum. It's both. That's it. Neil hit it right on the head.
All right, guys.
Great. Well, Neil, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on the podcast, and hopefully we can have you back on soon.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic. And as usual, we'll sign off. And Jay, say goodbye to everyone.
Bye to our fan. Nice job.
Good job.
Word. Adjective. Pronoun. Adverb. Run on. And
yeah, I know.
On
I don't know. What should my optimal usage rate be? That's really what I'm worried about.
I just want you to keep the turnovers down.
Yes.
And have fun.
I think
out
I might
there.
Have a good
That's assist. The main thing.
Think Monte Ellis.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm sorry. High usage.